Plus 49.
Buenas tardes y bienvenidos to another edition of Plus 49. I am Sigrid Arteaga. I'm thrilled to have you with us for another episode. Today, we're sitting down with internal communications specialist Monique Sitnik and to take a closer look into the influences of AI into the communication world. We'll also spotlight some of the week's hottest events, break down the top stories of the past few days, and of course, dive into your favorite segment, Ask a German. Let's start. In less than a month, it's Valentine's Day. Not only that, it's also February 23rd. And Germans will be head to the ballot box for the federal elections. According to Focus magazine, sitting data collected from all 16 federal states, more than 500,000 new voters are expected to participate this time. This marks the highest rate of first-time voters in the history of the Federal Republic. Why? Well, 2023 was the eighth year since the influx of the refugees in 2015. And until mid-2024, 8 years of residence in Germany has been a requirement for citizenship. As a result, more than 500,000 foreign nationals were naturalized between 2021 and 2023 and are now eligible to vote in the upcoming Bundestag election. Now, shifting gears to some local news, just recently, the local transport authorities in Berlin and Hamburg announced a new public transport app designed to provide passengers with more accurate, real-time information about U-Bahn, Tram, and bus delays, diversions, and more disruptions. The app will work similarly to ride-hailing apps, showing exactly where the bus is and when it's expected to arrive at your stop. In addition, the BVG is planning to integrate e-scooters and car leasing services into the platform. The app is scheduled to launch in spring 2026. We're nearing the end of the first month into 2025, and maybe, and hopefully, your New Year's resolutions are still going strong. Whether you promise to hit the gym more often, focus on self-care, or take big steps forward in your career, I am sure you're doing an amazing job. Speaking of careers, have you ever wondered what makes the German work culture so unique? Let's take a closer look at the important aspect of working life in Germany, recording working hours. Since March 2025, it has been a legal requirement for all employees in Germany to log their working hours. Employers must provide an official system to track daily hours. This regulation, which applies across all industries, was introduced to prevent unpaid overtime. In 2023 alone, 4.6 million people in Germany worked overtime, and a staggering one-fifth of those hours went unpaid, according to the Federal Statistical Office. The new system is set to ensure that employees are properly compensated, whether with additional pay or extra holiday leave. This legislation follows a 2019 European Court of Justice ruling that was initially poorly enforced. To address this gap, the German Federal Labor Court introduced its own legally binding system. Previously, only employers paying minimum wage were obligated to log hours, but now the rule applies to everyone. So, when do working hours officially begin in Germany? Well, the general rule is that your working hour starts when you reach your working station. For instance, for office workers, this typically means the moment you sit at your desk. Even tasks like waiting for a computer update or dealing with slow software count as working time. For jobs requiring preparation, such as changing into a uniform at a restaurant or sanitizing hands at our hospital, the same principle applies. If your employer requires this preparatory task, the time spent doing them must be included in your working hours. However, for the topic of commuting, it's a little different. Broadly speaking, your commute does not count as work time unless your employer dictates that travel must be used for work-related tasks. For example, if you're allowed to relax with a podcast or a book during your commute, this time doesn't count. We're sure you're hearing our podcast as you commute to your job. But if your employer expects you to work on the go, the time should be compensated. We're back with our interview of this week, which is Monique Sintik. I'm so very sorry. I'm probably not saying your last name well. So the best thing for me right now is to let you introduce yourself.
Thanks so much, Sigrid. It's Monique Sintik. And the only person I think who's pronounced it correctly was at a conference in Slovenia. And it's actually a surname from the region. It's Ukrainian. On my husband's side, the family was originally from Ukraine many, many years ago, and after the war moved to Australia. So interesting name. I think it means rye merchant or something of the sort, and a little easier to pronounce than my mother's Dutch surname. So I'm happy with that.
You're a global citizen and right now living in Germany, in Berlin.
That's right. Originally from Australia.
It's kind of a far, far away land from this part of the world.
I don't think you can get further away from Berlin, Germany than Australia.
So Monique, how long have you been living in Berlin now?
So this time round, it's been just over a year and a half. We moved in July, start of July 2023, from Australia over, but this was the third time. So we've had a little bit of a love affair with Berlin since about 2010, I think it was. And this is the third time that we've moved, and we've moved for good. And that's mainly because I've got two boys and they're at the age where they really need to settle down and build their friendships and have a sense of belonging. And it's just been a little challenging for them and also for myself and my husband personally, just ripping your roots out, moving country, reestablishing, ripping them out again and going back. So we've had to make the choice.
So first of all, welcome for your third and the charm one for the new Berliner. And you are a communications specialist and especially based on internal communication.
That's right. So I've been doing a lot of external communications earlier in my career, so PR and media relations. And then I discovered internal communications, which is what I deeply love. But the interesting thing is just about a month or two ago, I've started on a project with a client, and that's external communications again. So I'm juggling many balls and trying to keep them in the air.
I guess someone who works for communications, and the way we met actually was because of the IABC, if I'm also saying that correctly.
Absolutely. That's the International Association of Business Communicators.
Because at the end of the day, communications, yes, we can fix ourselves in internal communications, but external at some point is also something that you start doing in PR and you end up doing a little bit of everything. Even though sometimes I believe that not a lot of people understand what internal communications is.
That's true. So internal communications is focused on communicating with your employees, whether it's from your frontline staff, they might be in a factory or might be in a hospital treating patients, whoever they are, your frontline staff, all the way through to the CEO. And I like to think of it like the blood of the organization, where you've got to make sure that it's flowing in all directions at the right pace, at the right time, and it keeps the organization healthy and nourished.
That is a great definition, a great way to explain what internal communication is. You do work a lot with international people. So before we get into that part, let's hear some music. We're back with Monique. We have established what internal communications is. And as someone who has come for the third time to Berlin and is working a lot with internal communications, you are working constantly with international people.
That's right. So some of the clients I'm working with are sometimes in Switzerland. And when I was in Australia, I was working a lot with clients in Europe and also South Africa, for example. And I think when you work with a big organization, it's important to have that understanding and reach across all of the different countries and locations that your people or the people in the organization live and work in, because you not only have cultural influence, but you also have language influence and even location specific. So, for example, in Australia, I would say there is definitely a difference in sort of the way generally that people might approach something, say, in Queensland versus in Melbourne or maybe Tasmania. So I think it's having an understanding of those different people, because at the end it comes down to people, and you can categorize and segment as much as you like, but it is people, and it's having an understanding of what's important to those different people in different locations, in different jobs, in different countries, with different languages and different cultures.
What would be the biggest challenge for a company in Germany working with so many international people?
I think there's a little bit of a cultural challenge sometimes in just understanding different perspectives. And that's what's been so rewarding and eye-opening the first time that I ever went to another country. So when I was 17, 18, I took a gap year and went and worked in the Netherlands in a bed and breakfast. And I think in those situations where you're out of your own culture is when you first realize that other people think differently, and that your given way of, you know, what is the right way to do something or what is the normal is challenged for the first time. And you learn so much about your own culture from that. And it also, I think, gives you a bit more of a tolerance for other people's ways of doing things. And yeah, I would say that would be one of the key learnings and one of the key things to keep in mind when working across cultures, and also potentially a challenge for someone who's working in a very German company, whether they are German or not, is just understanding that mix of cultures with the other people that you're working with.
Monique, you're a specialist also in AI and something you're passionate about. You wrote a book.
Mm-hmm.
What is your input on AI in the communication world?
So my book, Internal Communication in the Age of Artificial Intelligence, looks at how we communicate with our employees in this day and age of artificial intelligence. So it sounds a little bit more attractive than saying the fourth industrial revolution, which is actually what we're in at the moment, where we've got technology, and not just AI, but technology such as spatial computing, so the metaverse, and other areas of technology that are impacting the way that we can and the way that we do business. And from my perspective, it's all about being more strategic, and that's why I wrote the book, is to help leaders, because our leaders are the ones who need to lead us through this time of change and time of disillusionment. If you read the Edelman Trust Barometer thing that came out the other day, things are not looking good for us, and we definitely need our leaders to be strong communicators. So my book is really about helping leaders understand why internal communication needs to be strategic, and provide some very simple models or ways of thinking about how to build a strategy from perhaps tactics. So in our days of artificial intelligence, you see it everywhere. I'm going to a fashion event in a week or so about fashion and AI. wherever you look on the intranets, whether you look on LinkedIn, it's all about AI and what AI can do for us. And I think from the communication practitioners or the internal communicators perspective, there are two elements to that. One is, how can we use AI in our job as communicators to help us be more efficient and more effective, whether it's from helping with segmentation of our audiences, whether it's helping draft text, so large language models, whether it's language translation, so using AI to do language translation for an internet or an intranet that gives more accessibility. And I'm not saying that translation is perfect or needs to be perfect or anything like that at this point in time, but there are all these tools that can help us and also help us be more accessible, open, and inclusive. And at the same time, the internal communicator is in an interesting position because we also need to support the rest of the employees in the organization get up to speed and feel comfortable with the AI that's being embedded in the organization. So helping to communicate with the other people in the organization what you can and can't do, for example, with the AI tools, why you should use it, helping them understand how to get on board, working closely with learning and development and training experts to make sure that our employees feel comfortable and not overwhelmed with these new technological options. And yeah, it's fascinating. There's a lot to do, but it's something that I find really exciting and really interesting.
Monique, you were talking about AI and language, and here is one thing that I've been thinking about. Once you learn another language, it is common knowledge that a lot of things open up in your brain because there are a couple of words that you cannot translate, and that implies a specific way that a society is. What would be your input regarding how AI can help us translate things, even if we don't really understand the language? Is that going to change the way we see the world now that we're not necessarily in need to 100% understand the language to speak it through AI?
Is a huge help already in understanding different cultural perspectives. I love the quote, "The limit of your language is the limit of your world." And that goes exactly back to what you were saying about how there are cultural nuances built into a language. For example, I think, and I can't, don't quote me on this, I'd love to actually hear from one of your listeners. I think it's Sweden have a huge, or Finland have a huge amount of different words to describe different types of snow. In Australia, we have snow. We've got snow. It's crunchy. It can be soft, but we don't have specific words for different types of snow. And I think that's just a very tangible example of different languages having more depth and different nuances in different areas. The German language, for example, is so beautiful in its just exact descriptions of different things that are built into the way that the different words are put together. And in terms of AI, you can already use it to create personas, for example, for marketing, and you can already train it on a particular persona. You can do the same in terms of having something translated and then, or maybe in English, and asking it to rewrite it with the nuances from a particular region or a particular culture. It's still not that accurate, but I know people who do AI language model training, they do have people from across the world and who are very much focused on training the language models on very specific cultural places, very specific cultural nuances as well. And so that's really coming at the moment. And I think that's going to be a helpful tool for people who know how to use these large language models to get those insights that we might not have previously been able to get. And if we pause for a moment and we think about, say, for corporate communication, how a lot of translations best practice would have previously been done, you would have your central communication message and then you would send it to someone who was locally placed to be able to translate that with the nuances of that culture and that language to get. It's an expensive job and an expensive task, and quite often for more simple projects or less nuanced messaging, you might get it translated into, for example, Spanish and not localize it. But I do know of companies who have set up localized translations or adaptions of a message to make sure that those cultural elements are in place. So we know it's important. It's just hopefully in the future and starting to be at the moment a little bit more accessible with the large language models that we have now.
I love that you see it that way. And I, to be honest, I didn't think about it that way. What you were saying happened to me also a lot when I was working for a company, because Spanish has so many different accents according to the region, especially if you're working in Latin America or in Spain. And I was working for a company that was based in Spain. And of course, there are a couple of things that in the Mexican way of thinking would have said something very different. And it was always kind of a bit of a laugh because they kept saying like, oh, are you going to take the bus? But the way that they said it that in Mexican Spanish, it was kind of like, are you going to make out with the bus? So, I mean, at the end of the day, it was super funny. And now that you put it that way, of course, it makes you feel a little bit more closer to the main quarters that are in another region and that you're trying to understand at least what they are trying to say. They're not saying make out with a bus, which is already a good thing. I'm just thinking it out from the other perspective of maybe if on a daily base here in Berlin, you're walking and a lot of people are not really into trying to learn the language because it's very complicated. And sometimes I feel that's kind of bad or not bad. It's just kind of a little bit disappointing because you can learn so much from the culture just by learning the language. That, of course, I'm kind of this fatalistic person, very German of me, of course. I always see the bad side of things. That maybe people are not going to learn the language anymore. They're just going to be using AI for it. And with that, I do believe that a couple of things are going to be getting lost.
There is something beautiful about being able to speak another language because, as we spoke about earlier, it opens up different parts in your brain and your mind in terms of understanding a new element of the culture. And I personally believe as well that it's really respectful to learn the language of the country that you're living in. My boys go to a local German school. They've just come home from school, so you might hear them in the background. And I'm almost envious that they're learning a second language so young in their lives and they'll be able to speak it without an accent. In terms of, I mean, my German's okay. It's not perfect. I've debated on stage before in German, and I've also presented on stage in German, and that was, yeah, I mean, it was okay, but it wasn't brilliant. And my goal for this year is to improve my German to the next level. But going back to your question about the AI, undecided yet, and I'm keen to get your thoughts, I'm undecided if it's going to just make us lazy on all fronts. So even just drafting an article in your native language, is that suddenly going to be too hard and too much brain power for us? Or is this language translation option, which, as I said, is getting better, like with the different products on a daily basis, is that actually going to be opening up our eyes and helping us feel like it's easier to access the language? So getting out your Google Lens to look at your child's homework to make sure that you've understood the question about Navi, like about science and the in the correct way, for example. Or if you're, I'm reading a magazine in German, if you pull out your phone and have a quick translation so that you're not stumbling over the entire sentence, that maybe there's one word that you don't fully understand, that maybe that's opening doors for people. So, yeah, I'm undecided. What do you think?
Maybe our generation will be a little bit more resistant to actually doing that. I mean, it's easy and it's fun to work it out. I mean, I do have to say that a lot of texts that I write at the moment are through ChatGPT. Yes, I do that. Because sometimes it's easier. On the other side, when I really need to get my creativity out, I need to do it on my own words. So, but that's our generation. So I would actually love to ask Marlene. She is our producer. She is in the beginning of her 20s. And of course, she is fully right now studying media. And she is in the middle of this transformation where she doesn't longer need to write everything down in her own words. She can just do it on ChatGPT. I don't know. How is it for you?
I have to say, I mean, ChatGPT is still new, so it was even new for me, even though I'm more into this digital world. I mean, I grew up not with a phone, but I got it in like my teens at least. And so I adapted to ChatGPT more easily, I would say. And I do get back to it quite fast. So I still Google stuff. I heard people that just ask ChatGPT anything, and I still go to Google on my first instance. But I think people my age actually use ChatGPT as their source for everything by now. So yeah, I think my generation will be the last point where it's switching, and the even younger people, I think they will rely a lot more on AI.
Super scary that nowadays you can actually just go to ChatGPT and ask one thing. I mean, there's not even your filter. It was already bad when you Google something and only the first results were available. But now with ChatGPT, you don't even have to look at that. So that does scare me a little bit. But we're not here for the scares.
It's interesting if we go back to the marketing communication perspective that a lot of companies haven't yet twigged to the idea that they need to rethink their SEO for their website, so their content on their website, because if ChatGPT can't read it and can't give the information, so all those beautiful videos and all those marketing videos, unless they're text-based at the moment, they're not going to be read. And unless you've optimized for the large language models, they're soon not going to exist, because who's going to go to a website?
That's crazy. Marlene, are you studying this sort of topics in the university?
Not really. Most of my studies rather focus on the past instead of how AI is incorporated into everything. I think uni is still a few years back, so it will take a few more years before we can study it.
For our listeners, we're all rolling our eyes. My boys in primary school still learn how to use a fountain pen. They write with a fountain pen.
To be honest, I like the idea that I can still know how to write a fountain pen. But I do believe that at some point in the university, you have to start questioning things that are happening in that moment. So, and this is kind of a message outside for everybody outside, that it's in the university age. Start working at whatever you are, because that, to have this conversation, it's sometimes even more enrichment than it is to sit down and understand what Freud said.
I'm actually going to be lecturing at the university this year, so I hope to be able to bring modern concepts to the classroom.
Please do, please do. I think Madeline is also... approve this.
Definitely, yes.
Monique, we're definitely going to talk with you again, because there's a lot of things going to happen in the next couple of months, We have now Trump. He's going to give us a couple of other things to say, probably also because he's putting so much money right now in AI and especially to the border with Mexico, of course. So we will ask you to come back very soon and we'll keep posting. And of course, Marlene will also come back with her contributions about being in the new university and talking about AI.
I'm very, very curious to hear and very, very much looking forward to having another chat as things progress. I think it's going to be a interesting, challenging year that will be wonderful for some and not so great for others. So looking forward to delving deep and pulling it apart and having a really good chat about it in our next episode together.
Thank you once again, Monique, and thank you, Marlene, also for being here today.
Thank you so much.
Plus 49. Ask a German.
One thing that I find comish, so has puzzled me, is a while ago I was working for a very, very German company, and there was almost a distrust of whenever I asked how someone was or how they were going. There was this sort of, oh, you're just asking that to be polite. And I don't know if it's an East German thing or a German thing overall, but I'm curious as to where that distrust of being curious about someone else's well-being comes from.
Once again, I think this is a fascinating phenomenon that highlights the differences in how cultures communicate and express themselves. For example, in the United States, it is customary to use "Hi, how are you?" as a standard conversation opener, often without expecting a detailed response. A quick "I'm fine" or "I'm good" suffices, regardless of the social setting, be it at work, with acquaintances, or even strangers. It's more of a polite gesture than an invitation to share one's true state of being. In Germany, however, the phrase "Wie geht's?" or "Wie geht es Ihnen?" is interpreted and used quite differently, depending on the context and the nature of the relationship. In a professional setting, as you've described, Germans often respond with a concise and matter-of-fact answer. This response might briefly touch on how their day has been going so far, or mention any surface-level inconveniences or positives, such as "Gut, danke, viel zu tun heute," which basically means "good, thanks, but busy day today." The brevity and neutrality of the answer are not a sign that they doubt your sincerity, but rather a reflection of cultural norms around professionalism and privacy. Germans tend to value directness and professionalism in the workplace, which often translate to maintaining boundaries between personal and professional spheres. As a result, sharing deeply personal feelings or issues in a work context might be viewed as inappropriate or overly informal. Additionally, there's a cultural emphasis on efficiency in communication, especially in professional interactions, which makes long, detailed exchanges about personal well-being less common. Another factor to consider is the level of relationship closeness. If you do not have a personal bond with your German colleague, they might interpret your question as a polite formality rather than a genuine inquiry into their emotional state. This is not about mistrusting your honesty, but about adhering to social norms that place importance on reserving personal disclosures for close friends or family members. In more personal settings, however, the situation changes. When you ask "Wie geht's?" to a close friend or family member, you are likely to receive a more heartfelt and honest answer. If the person feels comfortable, they might share not just how they feel, but also what might be troubling them or bringing them joy. In such cases, your question demonstrates genuine care and attentiveness, which is highly valued. So it's not that the Germans doubt your sincerity when you ask how they are. Rather, they adapt their responses to the expected level of formality in the situation. In more personal relationships, the same question is seen as a thoughtful and caring gesture, inviting open and honest communication.
And that's a wrap-up for today's episode of Plus 49. A huge thank you to our producer, Marlene Bacher, for making this show possible. And of course, to our wonderful guest this week, Monique Sitnik, for sharing her insights with us. Thank you for tuning in. And don't forget to catch us next time for more stories, insights, and discussions. Until then, take care and stay warm. Hasta la próxima.